Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. You know, it takes a lot of time to write about an organization as rich in history as the Green Bay Packers, but just a few years past the team's 100-year anniversary, official Packer historian Cliff Crystal has done it. He has a 4-volume history, and it's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. It's just been released, and we'll talk to him about how he rounded up all the information and what it took to separate fact from fiction. And we'll also take your questions as well. What have you always wondered about the Pack? Are you curious about maybe Vince Lombardi or one of the other coaches? What's going on today there? Join the conversation. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Cliff Crystal, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure.
Tell you what, you may not remember this, but back in 2017, I was up on the podium with you, on a stage with you and Mark Murphy at Lambeau. And we were talking about the history of the Packers, and you were hoping, I think back in 2017, we were kind of hoping to have it done by 2019, but apparently there was just too much there.
True, that's what basically happened. I think all of us in the organization started out thinking this would be maybe a 500-page book at max, and I had done the research and a lot of the interviews well before that, so it didn't surprise me. But as I started writing, I realized, you know, David Marinus wrote a 500-page book just on Vince Lombardi. I just started realizing it's such a rich history that there is no way. So I went back at some point in the process and said, well, how about 2 volumes and 3 volumes and then 4 volumes? And so we're a little late.
Well, I tell you what, it is an amazing collection of books. I've really enjoyed reading. And I'm going to admit to you right now, I didn't get through it all. You got over, must be 1,000 pages there anyway, isn't there?
Right. 4 volumes, more than 1,000 pages. A lot of pictures.
Yeah.
And a lot of pictures that have never been seen before. I guess a local attorney sent me an email about a week ago, somebody I don't know, and said he was really enjoying it. It's like reading the football version of the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. And I understand. It's a very detailed book.
But you know,
not for everybody, but I think it'll also be a collector's item. So.
Oh, man. And I'm telling you, there you can have detailed books that are not much fun to read. And then you can have detailed books like yours that get into a lot of details but are really a lot of fun to read. And I have to tell you, yours is a lot of fun to read. It is amazing. Did you get any pressure to gloss over, apparently not, some of the not-so-favorable parts of Packer history?
No, Mark Murphy was committed from the beginning to tell the story as is, an unvarnished version. I don't know that anybody could write a definitive history. I don't know if that's attainable, but I tried to come as close to it as possible, and I don't think you can tell that story without including the good as well as the bad.
Yeah.
The lowlights as well as the highlights.
Bradley and Edgar is on the line and has a question for you there. Let's go there. Hi, Bradley.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Cliff. Really looking forward to getting my hands on that book. So I'll be buying 5 of them, 1 for myself, 4 for my children.
Woo! So,
thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to know, you went through the whole history, and I'd like to know what you think, and it doesn't have to be pertain to records or anything else, just as top three Packer coaches and the top five, if you would, players, just what your thoughts are on those two questions. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you kind of get into that in a way, not your own opinion necessarily, but, you know, through the book, there are times where that's commented on. But what do you think? We got top five players and the top three coaches.
Well, I think that the top three coaches are pretty obvious, but Vince Lombardi, Curly Lambeau won 11 of our 13 championships. I'd probably give Mike Holmgren a slight nod over Mike McCarthy. And Matt LaFleur is off to a heck of a start, so he could certainly break that top three in time. As far as the greatest players, one of the things I really tried to avoid in the book was to express my own opinions.
Yeah.
I just tried to be informative based on my research. But top players, I don't think there's any question. Two greatest players in Packers history are Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. They're the past two quarterbacks. You can put them with whatever order you'd like. I think they far exceed anyone else. I think one of the things that people find fascinating about the book is today everybody thinks Don Hutson is the all-time great of the Lambeau era. I quote a number of players who felt that Clark Hinkle was the greatest player of that period. You got to remember, players went both ways, and Hutson was a liability as a defensive player. The ends played tight to the tackles, basically, and he was a liability as a blocker. But he was a one of a kind receiver who probably revolutionized the game more than he dominated it. Whereas Hinkle, even the old Bears will tell you that Hinkle is better than Bronco Nagurski. So he'd be in the discussion. And then there's quite a bit about Vern Llewellyn. Probably the greatest era of Packer history pre-Lombardi was that three-year repeat, 29-31, where the Packers were the first team to win three straight titles. And the star of those teams was Vern Llewellyn. And the game was all about, the average score of an NFL game was like, total points was like 10 to 12. I forget what it was. It's in the book. And Llewellyn was a punter, along with being an all-purpose back, outstanding offensive and defensive back. But he was the greatest punter in the game and basically dictated field position. And he's not even in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think it's one of the gross oversights. But I do try to go into detail about the impact he had on those early championship teams.
Yeah, that early history, I read that relatively carefully because what I was going to do, I'll admit to you right now, Cliff, what I was going to do was kind of breeze through the books and sort of pick up points here and there and to use during the discussion. But once I got into that first book, I couldn't do that. You forced me by your good writing to really go into and read it line by line. And so I'm going to throw you a little bouquet there because I thought you did a wonderful, wonderful job with that. You mentioned, go ahead.
Thank you. And I just, this is not, I'm sure I've devoted a lot more pages to explain about the inner workings of the organization, the internal battles that went on, the controversies, a lot of the off the field stuff, as well as how the whole history of the Packers kind of intersects with the history of Green Bay. And cover that as well. I'll go into great detail about the role of Prohibition, or actually Green Bay's the social life in Green Bay during the years of Prohibition, when the city basically ignored the federal amendment. That to me is one of the more fascinating stories. Also, the battle that I didn't realize when I began over whether Lambeau was going to win the power struggle 49-50. He really came closer than I think most people think to privatizing the company. And what happened then with Vic McCormick, who would have been his finance guy, his biggest financial backer, and what happened to his life, I don't think there's any question if that would have happened, the Packers never would have survived. But that, too, was a period that I found extremely fascinating.
I did as well. Curly Lambeau was such a fascinating person. Man, he had a lot of warts. But without him, I don't think we'd have a Green Bay Packers.
No question. I don't think there's anybody else that was alive during the time that he nurtured the Packers through their first 30 years who could have kept the team alive. And as Lee Remmel, our former historian who shared so many memories with me, said, he could charm the birds out of trees, but he also couldn't call them a compulsive liar, that basically anything Curly told you was likely to be a lie.
Cliff Crystal, our guest today, the official historian of the Green Bay Packers. And we're talking about his book. He's going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. The book is a four-volume set, The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. You'll be able to join in with your questions, and I hope you do. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, looking at 100 years of Green Bay Packer history on the show today with our guest, the official Packer historian, Cliff Crystal. His four-volume history, it's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019, was recently released, and we're talking about it with him. I'd love to have you join in the conversation. Questions about the Packers and the Packers' history? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And you know what? Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Peter in Pewaukee. Peter, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry and Cliff. Cliff, do you remember a restaurant that was owned by Bob Long in Brookfield or Wauwatosa? And I think Max McGee may have had some financial interest in that restaurant. That's my question. Second part is three of my friends and myself went into that restaurant very late on a Saturday night long ago, and there was just a few people in there, but we noticed Max McGee at the bar. And, of course, we had to go up and introduce ourselves, and we talked to him for a bit. And the biggest question we had for him was, is it true that you and Vince Lombardi sparred just about every night that he had some type of rules and regulations of where you could go and what time you had to be back in? He said, absolutely. He said, he and I went around and around and around all the time. And his goal, anytime we had those nights, was to catch me in the act. That was his goal.
Cliff, comment.
You know, Bob Long started Pizza Hut's, as I recall. Didn't get into this in the book. Max McGee was involved with Chee Chee's. And then I think he was a partner with Fuzzy and his left guards, and Max had a restaurant at the left end in Manitowoc. So it could have been any of those places. I would guess if it, If it was pizza, it would have been the Pizza Hut or Chi-Chi's. Yeah, there's no question. My favorite restaurant story in the book involves Lamar McCann. And it was the night that after Bart Starr replaced McCann in Pittsburgh.
McCann was really mad.
Yes, and he confronted Lombardi in a restaurant in Green Bay. They came back on the plane, and McCann got drunk on the plane and went and confronted Lombardi in a restaurant in Green Bay, and that's when Bart Starr became the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. And it was, I quoted some of the players who were there that night and about the incident that occurred. But back to McGee, yeah, I think that I'm sure that he was fine probably more than anyone else in the team during the Lombardi years, except for maybe Hornick. But Lombardi had great respect for Max McGee. I mean, he called him one of the biggest. I think at one point he might have even said that he was his best playmaker as far in terms of big play ability. Max McGee was, I think, a much better player than a lot of people realized because he was more of a star of those early Lombardi teams and did not start on the three-peat champions, although he had that great Super Bowl.
He had that great Super Bowl. And you know, there are some people that have stories about the Packers that may or may not have been true, and I was going to ask you about some of the more widely believed stories that turned out to be false. One that you write about in the book had to do with Max McGee when he starred in that Super Bowl, and the story afterwards was that he had been out all night the night before because he didn't think he was going to play at all because Boyd Dowler was going to be starting. And then Dowler got hurt and McGee went in and then was kind of a hero of that game. But the story about that he was out all night, I think you wrote that wasn't necessarily the case.
Well, some of his teammates, Boyd Dowler said, yeah, he's convinced that he was out. Dave Hanner was doing bed checks that night, insisted that Noel McGee didn't go out. I think, you know, the story as it grew talked about how McGee went out into town and got drunk. And McGee was not a big drinker from what a lot of his teammates told me. He was a ladies' man. And so I believe the part that he may have hooked up with a couple of stewardesses in those days, flight attendants today, that part might be true. I don't believe that he was out, got sloshed to the point where he was playing with a terrible hangover during that game. But I don't know that anybody knows the truth, and I don't even know. A lot of people said Max didn't know what the truth was, but, you know, he had told so many different stories.
Oh, man. He was such a delight to hear until when he was on as a kind of a color man on TV. It was always great to hear him talk. I can remember him telling a story about a time when the Packers just got throttled by the Baltimore Colts. And the Colts at the time had a horse that would run around the whole field. And it was kind of a warm day, and he said we almost killed that horse.
Yeah, I write about that. That was the 56-0 shellacking under Scooter McLean in the 1-10-1 season.
Oh, boy. Bill in Oregon emailed to ask if you could offer some background on the loan from Milwaukee that resulted in Milwaukee games.
I don't know that there was a loan involved. What happened was that a fan fell out of the stands in a game in 1931, sued the Packers, and the team went into receivership 1933 and was in dire financial straits for 17 months. I mean, the Packers barely clung to life during that period. And one of the things they did was play a game in Milwaukee that first year. It turned out to be kind of it drew a good crowd, Orchard Field. At the same time, turned out to be a disaster because that wasn't an ideal place to play for football, play a football game. So they ended up the next year switching it to State Fair Park. But it was really Oliver Keekley who was the driving force behind that. And the Packers had no option at that point. They needed to increase attendance. They were desperate for money. And so including playing games in Milwaukee was to their financial benefit. The only money that I know that was involved other than, what was in the contract was that the Packers contributed to a journal charity fund, or one of Oliver Keekley's favorite charities, donated some money to that.
It was interesting, and just much later, there was even some talk about moving the Packers out of Green Bay and moving them right to Milwaukee, and there were some players that were even in favor of it, you write about.
Well, that was the 80s.
Yeah, way later.
And Frank DeFord, who wrote the story for SI in the late 80s, probably the most respected sports journalist in the country at the time, said it was time to close up shop in Green Bay and move the team to Milwaukee. But there also was talk in the early 50s. In fact, I go into some detail about Fred Miller, who was a good friend of the Packers, but at the same time, a lot of people thought his motive was that he wanted a NFL team playing in County Stadium along with the Braves, and that he was close to getting the Packers to move there just before he died in the plane crash.
Will in Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Will.
Thanks, guys. Wonderful program. I sure appreciate your perspective as a historian. You have a command and control of a tremendous amount of information. Before the break, you guys were talking about speculating on the greatest player here and there in the Packers' history. Wondering if we could maybe expand that a bit, talk a little bit about some of the, from your end of things, what you found out, maybe some of the finest offenses and defenses, in the history that you cover in 100 years. And then maybe some of the outstanding players, so we can get a little bit broader sense of, some of the excellent offenses, defenses, and players. And thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, Will. Appreciate it.
There's quite a bit about, I go into a lot of detail in the early years about how Lambeau would leave Green Bay, head to the West Coast as soon as the season was over, scout players out there, and then recruit him. And he relied heavily on his ties from Notre Dame, his 1 year at Notre Dame. I mean, Newt Rockne's coaching tree spread as far as probably any in that period of time, not only right after he coached, but even after his death, because of all his former players who went into coaching, even at the high school level, like Cecil Isbell, one of the great underrated players. A lot of people believed he was better than Sammy Baugh and would have been in the Hall of Fame if he hadn't retired after five seasons. His high school coaches had trained in the Notre Dame box, Lambeau's offense, and the Rockne system. His college coach was, and then he played it with the Packers. So he played the same offense all the way through his football career from high school on. But all the some of the finds that that Curley uncovered, hidden gems, Irv Comp being an example from Milwaukee, and how he discovered him at a small school in Kansas. And then the Lyle Blackburn, Jack Vanese years, the drafts that they were responsible for, those great drafts of players that Lombardi mostly won with. And so I do go into a lot of detail about what how they found these players, how important they were to the success of the team. Also, I get into the fact that in a public speech, Vince Lombardi called Paul Hornung the greatest player he ever coached. The nonsense the Pro Football Hall of Fame spreads about Lombardi calling Greg the finest player he ever coached. There's no basis or truth to that. Nothing was ever written about that until after Lombardi's death, when I believe somebody, when Forrest Gregg became coach of the Browns, somebody told the writers there that Lombardi had written that in Run the Daylight. There's he didn't write it there. Not even a suggestion of it. So I get into that a little bit. And then also another big, a key part is the role of, I don't think there's any doubt, the key to those championships. Bart Starr had a great year in 66, tremendous field general. But the offense wasn't what it was in the late 60s compared to what it was when Lombardi won his first two titles. The key to really those 65, 66, and 67 championship teams were the African-American players. Lombardi's open-mindedness, some of the things he did to make sure that his players weren't, black players weren't victims of prejudice. And, I mean, when the Packers won that last title, they had six black starters on defense. I believe that was more than any other NFL team. Five of them headed out to the Pro Bowl, where they started in the Pro Bowl when it was starters were determined by the head coach of the team. So, and I get into a lot about the role those players played, and Emblen Tunnell and mentoring some of the younger black players like Adderley and Wood. So there's quite a bit about a lot of the players in Packers history. There's so many greats. I mean, there's so many players that could be in the Hall of Fame that, or at least should be considered from those early years that we'll never get in now.
Yeah. Brian in Fond du Lac, let's go to you. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say a little short story here. My grandfather actually played against Curly Lamble on the Packers in 1919 and 1920. He was a member of a team called the Stamble Miners. It was a team from the UP. And he loved football, and he actually got married to my grandmother about 2 weeks prior to the Thanksgiving game, which I believe was in 1920. And the players on the team passed a hat to get some money so they could have a nice hotel room in Green Bay for their honeymoon. So my grandmother was always said that, you know, the Packers were part of her honeymoon. And he just loved football so much. Even he was in his 70s, and he built goalposts in his yard, and he practiced his dropkick field goals. That was a technique that I could never master. And I just wanted to, you know, mention that I think we owe some appreciation to all those young men on all those city teams way back then who really laid the foundation for what would later become the NFL. And I just wanted to share that. And I'm really proud of my grandfather and all those players from that era.
Oh, Brian, thank you so much. Comment, Cliff?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that surprised me more than anything is the team historian and a number of people that tell me they had an uncle or a grandfather who played for the Packers. And we have complete records from back then. How many of those stories are not true? But I believe this gentleman. Couple quick things about Stamble. First of all, 1919, 1920, the 2 years that the Packers were independents, Beloit and Stamble were the only two teams that they really played that were competitive with them on the field. The Stamble game, I write about a little bit about that. It was the in 20, it was the first Thanksgiving Day game played in Green Bay. One of my disappointments in my research was that the Iron River paper, and I think I remember this correctly, I went up there, Iron River, Michigan. Stamble was like a twin city at one time. I think it's now part of Iron River. And I went to Northern Michigan, which has a great collection of old UP papers. I went to the Paper and Iron River, and there was a fire at the newspaper, and all the papers from 1919 and 1920, the Iron River or Stambaugh, I forget if they did also had a newspaper, were destroyed by this fire. So I could not research that. The 1919 trip to sounds like there was huge betting on that game, and there was a great story, and one of my disappointments was I couldn't get to the bottom of it about the 1919 game. That said, the 1920 game, on the eve of that game, the Packers and Rigney Dwyer, Green Bay, was a starter in the 1919 and 1920 team. He was working his real job in the Milwaukee Road Railroad, fell under the wheels of a moving train that night in the yard here, lost an arm and a leg. And so the Packers played the game against Stambaugh, and Dwyer was, you know, life was on the line at that point. And then they organized a benefit game for him that they played, I think it was 10 days later, and raised a considerable amount of money for Rigney Dwyer. But the process of organizing that game and the whole Dwyer story starts with the Stambo game on Thanksgiving right after the accident.
Yeah, that's a great, it's a terrible thing, but another one of the great little stories that you don't, you're not going to read elsewhere than in probably in Cliff's book. And there are so many things that, as I looked and read through the book, the Packers, they sold out their seats for the first time in 1961.
Yeah, Packers were like every other small town. They didn't draw well, but Curly Bramble built a powerhouse. So when the average attendance at NFL games in the 20s and the 30s was less than 12,000, the Packers were drawing 30,000 plus to their games in the Polo Grounds against the Giants and to games in Wrigley Field against the Bears. They were filling the pocketbooks of the house of George Halas and the Maras, and that's how they survived. They were the biggest draw in the league on the road. In fact, in 1940, I don't know that anybody's ever written this before in a Packer history book. Lambeau came back from a league meeting where there was discussion that they wanted to turn the Packers into a traveling team because they were not drawing well in Green Bay and just be a road team because they drew so well everywhere else.
But Curly stuck to his guns on that.
Right, right.
and saved them. Oh, man, I tell you, there's so many things that I'd forgotten that there was some, or I didn't know to begin with, that there was talk about putting a dome on Packers Field. And there's a whole lot more. Cliff, it's been a great fun. We could go on here for another 2 hours. I'm pretty sure of that. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today and for putting together this great history of the Green Bay Packers. Cliff, thanks again.
Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
Cliff Crystal, his book, The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers, 1919 to 2019. Cliff Crystal, the author. Take a look at that book. It's really something. Tomorrow, our wildlife show, David Drake and Jamie Knack are back. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.